The Michigan Public Service Commission is a governor-appointed panel that regulates public utilities and telecommunication services with a mission to help ensure safety, reliability, access, and fair rates. It consists of three members who serve staggered six-year terms, one is designated chair, and no more than two can represent the same political party. Democrats won executive positions in the last election, and Governor Gretchen Whitmer filled her first PSC vacancy. We'll meet the newest commissioner, discuss the latest PSC business, and review some key energy topics and issues just ahead on Media Meet. Hello and welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guest is Michigan Public Service Commissioner Dan Scripps. Welcome.
Thanks, Bill.
Commissioner, you have a background addressing energy issues at virtually all levels. An honors graduate of University of Michigan Law School, you worked out of Washington, D.C., advising utilities and developers. You did a term in the State House, serving on committees dealing with finance, energy, telecommunications, and environmental protection. You were also president of the Michigan Energy Innovation Business Council, an energy trade group, from 2012 to 2017, is that correct?
That's correct.
And most recently, you were Midwest Policy Program Director, covering 13 states for the Energy Foundation. Can we hear just a bit about your personal background, and what turned you toward energy development and policy?
Well, it's, I think, one of those things where it probably makes more sense looking backward than it did at the time. But I ran for the State House for the first time in 2006, about a year after graduating from law school, and really didn't know much about energy. And through the course of that campaign, represented a district in northwest lower Michigan that had a little bit of everything. So everything from some oil field development to the first commercial wind turbine in the state of Michigan, the Ludington pumped storage facility, a large, basically a battery, a coal plant, just, you know, sort of a little bit of everything. And to run in and ultimately represent that district, it was sort of a crash course in how energy is generated and consumed. When I ultimately was elected to the State House in 2008, as you mentioned, served on committees that dealt with energy and telecommunications, and following that went back to the practice of law and sort of focused on energy. So one thing led to another, and here I am.
All right. We should note that you were appointed to complete the term of Public Service Commissioner Rachel Eubanks, a fellow Democrat, who left the post to become state treasurer. That term, so your term ends in 2023. How do you generally view the PSC and your role in it?
Well, it's, as you mentioned in the beginning, there are three of us, and we really work together. So ultimately, we have a saying that we speak through our orders, that it's ultimately the official way that we decide cases that represent the views of the commission as opposed to any one commissioner. Okay. And I think we all bring something different. The chair has a long history, was a staff member, an energy consultant. Obviously, Commissioner Sari has a history in energy. I think one of the things that I bring is that I actually come from northern Michigan. I'm not lucky enough to be a Uper, but come from northern lower Michigan, and
right.
Just having a sensitivity of the different challenges in rural communities, and particularly in the northern part of the state, I hope that that's something that I can bring that helps shape how we as a commission ultimately look at things.
I think it will. There's some talk lately about activist utility commissioners, but how much statutory authority does a PSC have in Michigan?
Yeah, you know, we're really a creature of we were created by statute and are a creature of the legislature. They ultimately gave us our powers. At different times, we've regulated everything from Mackinac Island ferries to motor carrier, the trucks on the road, neither of which we regulate today. Okay. And so it is really the legislature that defines what we do. And then within that, I think they give us some discretion to fill in the blanks. But I want to take a pretty humble view of the position, and that is, you know, that we can serve as essentially judges to some extent, but within very much the confines set by the folks directly elected by the people.
And within the law.
Yeah.
Let's look at some recent PSC actions related to the region. In May, the commission approved rate refunds to natural gas and electric customers of Michigan Gas Utilities Corporation and the new Upper Michigan Resources Energy Resources Corporation. It was the third and final step in capturing savings for ratepayers from President Trump's tax cut. Can you tell us about Calculation C and what it means for utilities and customers?
Sure. This is something where in 2017, as you mentioned, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act was enacted that reduced corporate rates from 35% to 21%. And at that point, and really led by Rachel Eubanks, our state treasurer today, a sense that for regulated utilities, that's the customer's money. And so in a series of steps, we've really sort of gone and looked at, starting at the point that we took up the issue and then going back a little bit to when the tax cuts actually became effective, and now with this third step looking forward. But the first two steps, which are completed, have refunded about $600 million back to Michigan ratepayers. And we're now in the third one, which is a utility-by-utility calculation, but it is ultimately sort of taking this reduction in the rates paid by our electric and gas utilities and sending that money back to the ratepayers.
That's great. The PSC also approved a settlement that lowers electric rates for some 40,000 residential customers, the UP Power Company, the region's largest utility. The move to rebalance costs between business and residential customers will yield about a 2% rate increase for UPCO. I understand there are important system benefits for the settlement. Could you explain that?
Yeah, I just want to start by the top line, which is that most ratepayers, residential ratepayers of UPCO, will actually see a rate reduction. And there's been a lot of focus, as there should be, on the high cost of electricity in the Upper Peninsula
That
does to families. And over the last several years, in a series of cases, we've started to inch that back down. And I think that's important. It affects every part of life up here, and it's something that we're keenly aware of as well. In addition, there are approved expenditures in that case, including some increases in automatic meters that will reduce the duration of outages when they happen, because we'll be able to see them in real time.
Okay.
That will reduce meter reading costs and ultimately improve the accuracy of customer bills.
That's great. An outcome related to national distributed generation issue is that UPCO will expand its net metering program, in which customers produce their own electricity, or who produce their own electricity on site, can get a credit from the utility. Some states have dropped net metering on a cost versus return criteria kind of thing, believing that it doesn't really pay for itself. And some are looking for other methods of compensation. Part of this could be driven by new technology or circumstances related to the technology. We Energies, for example, has been criticized for attempt to impose fees on customers with solar panels. Some communities are trying to ban or exclude rooftop solar. How do you view distributed generation and net metering in Michigan, and what action would you favor?
Yeah, this is another one of these things that's largely driven by the legislature. So net metering was created in 2008 as part of that energy law. And then in 2016, we really moved from net metering as it stood for those 8 years to a new distributed generation tariff that tries to more accurately evaluate the cost of serving those customers with rooftop panels and the benefits they provide back.
Okay.
As part of the earlier iteration, utilities were allowed to cap participation at 1% of their total load. And as you mentioned, the UPCO settlement actually doubled that, so it goes to 2%. And UPCO, in part because of its rates, was the only utility in Michigan that had already met that cap and had basically said no more.
Topped out already.
Right. So this provides another window for people to go forward. I will say that it's not as lucrative as it was, but unlike some other states, we're not imposing grid charges or system access charges. In the first two cases that we've reviewed, both UPCOs and DTEs, both utilities had proposed those, and in both cases, the ultimate result was that those system access charges aren't going to be levied on their customers.
I see. The prospect of more distributed energy mix is a challenge to a lot of utilities these days, but they seem to be going in that direction. UPCO has agreed to spend $13.5 million on its distribution system. What actually is being done there?
Well, for starters, it's getting the trees off the lines, and it's, you know, it's amazing. It's 2019, but still the biggest issue with distribution is that we've got vegetation that really gets in the way. Oh, yeah. Especially, you know, in an area like the UPCO service territory, a lot of trees.
A lot of trees and people. That's true.
So one of the things that I think is innovative about what was ultimately resolved in that case is that they're going to spend a lot more money on tree trimming, and we've given them some sweeteners in that they can actually do some shared savings with their customers once they get to a certain point. Okay. But they have to spend the money. And if they don't ultimately spend the money and, in fact, clear out 372 miles per year of trees to keep those outages down and the length of them down, then they have to refund the customers.
It goes back to the customer.
Exactly.
That's good. This is a case of rates going down for some customers, while UP Electric rates are known to be disproportionately high. It was a big issue last year. We've seen some change with UMERC and new infrastructure in the region for the past 2 years. Where do you see rates going in the next 2 years?
You know, each case really is driven by the facts in it, and so it's hard to predict exactly where it is. I will say that we are paying probably especially close attention to rates in the Upper Peninsula, given some of the challenges. There is a need for investment in things like tree trimming and other pieces in terms of modernizing the grid and ensuring reliability. Okay. But we are very focused on the cost impacts to a population that is paying rates that are significantly higher than other parts of the state.
Are you satisfied that that most of the major utilities are in a good position to begin making more use of distributed energy?
Yeah, I think in a lot of cases we've done the work in the state. You know, I'll say in my past job, I looked across 13 states in the Midwest, and there are a number of states that have talked about doing this, and in some cases put out flashy press releases and the rest. You know, we've done what we do in Michigan, and that is to get into the details and put the shoulder to the wheel and start doing the actual work. And I think that puts us in a better position across the state to really make the impact. It's coming. We know that it's coming. There are folks who want more control over their energy, both how it's used and how it's generated. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think we have an obligation to have a system that's adaptable and can reflect those changes.
Okay. Due to climate events, emissions, and other issues, efforts to what's being called decarbonize electric power production is growing across the Midwest. Michigan's Integrated Resource Planning, IRP process, adopted in 2016, is said to be pretty helpful there. About 90% of the state's power production comes from two downstate companies, Consumers Energy and DTE. The Consumers IRP would phase out remaining coal plants by 2040 and rely more on renewables. I've seen the DTE plan simply described as less ambitious. I'm not sure how far they go. There would seem to be a lot at stake if we want clean energy and more efficiency. Are the two majors in Michigan, as you see it, doing enough?
Well, I think the Consumers Energy plan that was approved earlier this month really does lay out a different path forward. In it, they're retiring two coal units in 2023, examining whether to shutter two additional ones as early as 2025, stepping up their energy efficiency and a number of other demand-side resources, and then building an awful lot of solar in this period, sort of between now and 2030 and then beyond. And that is, I think, a pretty significant departure from business as usual.
Interesting that they're choosing solar. Wind took off there for a while. Why? You have any idea of why they decided on solar?
I think part of it is just sort of when the sun shines versus when the wind blows. And you get solar producing very much closer to the ultimate system peaks when people are using the energy in those hot summer afternoons. And that, I think, has really driven sort of how those resources are evaluated in terms of the capacity they produce for the system.
Okay. Yet power plants are not the only contributors to serious emission problems. A recent Minnesota study links air pollution to as many as 10% of the deaths annually statewide there, with more pollution coming from transportation and less from coal plants. Every typical car contributes to this problem, and electric and hybrid vehicles could be part of the solution. But batteries are limited, vehicles are expensive, charging infrastructure simply isn't there yet. although many utilities are now planning for it, I understand. It's just a long way between charges and the UP at this point. What's the Public Service Commission's role in that conversion to EVs and alternate fuel vehicles?
You know, this is something that we're spending a lot of time on, and I'd credit Commissioner Saari, who's really been the leader on this, both in Michigan and to be honest, nationally, in terms of the role of regulators in this space.
Yeah.
In part because of the leadership and then ultimately the plans put forward by consumers and DTE. Over the course of two cases earlier this year, we approved a total of $23 million for utility investment in, pardon the pun, accelerating EV infrastructure to make sure that we get more charging stations and the distance is less.
And there's more than one kind of charging station.
Exactly.
So it takes some other engineering.
Go ahead. And then at the same time, the Michigan Energy Office has produced a report that looks at sort of charging station locations across Michigan, including very much the UP and where we can optimize the system. So I think we'll see more in this, and we're trying to get out in front. Obviously, if you're spending ratepayer dollars, they need to have a direct benefit from this. And if we can combine that with smart charging, we can use more of our existing infrastructure more regularly, and that actually can help reduce energy prices even for those folks who aren't driving an EV. So it really is a win-win if you do it the right way.
There are about a million EVs in the country right now. It was expected that there would be perhaps 7 million, you know, within the next couple of years. What happened? Were policymakers doing enough to advance it? And where do you see the business of it going in 10 years? Because this has to happen as the business rolls out.
Absolutely, and it's one of these chicken and egg things. If you send the signals that charging is available, I think more people will feel comfortable. The range anxiety goes away a little bit.
Right, range anxiety is a big deal up here.
Yeah.
It's a long way between towns.
I have run out of gas in the UP, and somebody who had a snowmobile and a gas can was more than helpful in terms of getting me back on the road. But it is, and coming from sort of rural Michigan, it's something that I see firsthand. It's not the same thing as running from Lansing to Detroit or Grand Rapids, and the system needs to be able to accommodate that if we're really going to have it be not just somebody's second car, but their only car, and that's probably the bridge. But at the same time, I think fleet operators are looking at total cost of ownership and the competitive nature of charging with electricity and starting to make that move, and others as well. So there's a number of driving forces.
There's a proposal for a national company right now that not only would produce the trucks or produce these kinds of vehicles, long-haul vehicles, but would also produce the infrastructure along the way, along their route, which would be, really a contribution. Some U.S. cities, large companies, and businesses are rolling out electric fleet and public transit vehicles. You're seeing buses now being transformed in some cities. Does this pose any special challenge for a regulator?
It does in terms of, it's not a unique thing. When we've seen load growth in the past, we've responded, and ultimately that's sort of core utility economics, that a growing load is actually great for all customers because it really does keep costs in check. But particularly if you're putting these things along highways, which makes sense from a vehicle, but often isn't the place that's best connected to the electric grid, they're probably going to need some upgrades in terms of handling, significant load growth through the electrification of transportation.
Okay. We're looking at the Public Service Commission and related business with the newest commissioner on the panel, Dan Scripps. The PSC also handles telecommunications projects, a field that also bears on security and utilities and transportation. Utilities are increasingly investing in telecom infrastructure to support the deployment of smart grid technology and make other kinds of upgrades. Some say this makes the grid and utilities vulnerable to hacking. Are there state regulatory requirements addressing this?
You know, this is something that's on everybody's mind. Last year, we upgraded some of our rules on cybersecurity that require utilities to report any breaches and really start to look at the protocols they've got in place. But it is, it's one of those things that you always have to stay a step ahead. And as part of this trip, we had the opportunity to actually sit down with the folks here at NMU at the Cyber Institute, their new institute, and it's amazing what they're doing, and really sort of pairing the curriculum to what's needed in different fields. And we talked about opportunities to link it up to some of the challenges that we're seeing in both electricity and gas, and to have that asset in Michigan and to have it in northern Michigan, I think, is something we can all take pride in.
It's also reported that EV drivers could become cyber targets if states require credit card readers, for example, on charging stations. Any concerns there?
I think it's just one more wrinkle. It's the chain's as strong as the weakest link, and we've got to be vigilant. The hackers don't care about the jurisdictional boundaries between utilities or ultimately what your plan is. Exactly. And so we've got to be looking across the whole, taking a systems approach to ensuring the security of the grid and of the energy infrastructure from a cyber perspective.
Okay. Meanwhile, there are heroic efforts being made to expand broadband in rural areas from Congress on down. Systems for online access now in practical terms have the status of a public utility. So it makes a lot of sense that you guys are involved. In any new developments from Lansing that would improve access in this region?
Yeah, towards the end of last year, the legislature appropriated $20 million in new money that's really focused on broadband deployment in rural areas. And I've heard actually that some of that is starting in the UP instead of starting downstate and making its way north, which is a nice turn of events. But it's the kind of thing, and some of that we don't necessarily directly regulate, or we're not even the lead agency, but there's a lot of collaboration going on between the different folks who are responsible for administering those funds and making sure that the sort of dialogue with the providers, the telecommunications and broadband providers, yeah, is as seamless as we can make it.
Okay. Access to propane for UP residents has become a big issue due to reliance on a pipeline that runs under the Straits of Mackinac. Enbridge, which operates the Line 5 pipeline, is going to court to affirm an agreement with the state that has been ruled illegitimate by the new Attorney General. You're an attorney, a clean energy advocate, and policy expert. Whose case would seem to be stronger?
This is one of those things where we've, at the commission, have some specific responsibilities in terms of the siting of new petroleum pipelines. And mm-hmm. So I want to focus on that piece. But I will also say that that this is an issue that obviously gets amplified with that discussion. But UP energy issues and propane issues are always something that we should look at. So two things. The first is, following the polar vortex and the associated energy emergencies back in January, the governor directed the commission to take a pretty comprehensive look at the state of the state's energy landscape. And so we have an initial report that'll be coming out at the beginning of July, an opportunity for public comment on that, and then a final report in September. And propane, along with electricity, gas, cyber, some of the other things that we've talked about, are all part of that report. And then the other part is the creation of a new UP Energy Task Force. And I'm pleased to be able to serve on that. And it really takes a look at propane. And
we should mention, yeah, this is, the governor said she was going to appoint a panel to look at alternatives to Line 5. And and came up with a panel of, what, 19 people?
19 people. 12 of them are from the UP, which I think is important. The decisions mm-hmm. affecting the UP should be made with UP folks at the table, very much so. And so that was announced, and it really is sort of whatever the cause, and whether it's an emergency like we saw a couple years ago with the polar vortex and some other things that mm-hmm. that shot propane. We were driving to Kansas to get some of that during that time, or something where we see that there's either a long term or short term pause in Line 5, and how do you sort of respond to that to ensure that UP folks are taken care of.
And the issue is broader than just whether propane's flowing there or not. Unions have stepped up to say that thousands of jobs are on the line and the service is needed here and elsewhere. That's all, I assume that's all being taken into consideration.
I think so, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of issues with this. There's pricing, there's obviously a lot of this was driven by the what would happen if there was a rupture in the Straits. I mean, that's a crown jewel of the state, and, sure. And certainly. So there are a lot of issues that are at play, and I know that there are folks on the governor's team who are looking at it very seriously.
Okay. While the rollout of renewables is steadily gathering steam across the country, there are still some barriers. The choice or location of systems can be controversial. We saw that recently when a wind project was abandoned in the UP. Rural areas are slower to see the opportunities, and access is a problem for lower-income urban people. They don't have rooftops to put solar on and other access to other advanced technology. Yet, innovative methods of financing are increasing access and options. Could you briefly describe the ones that appear to be making a difference, or just a couple, I think, of financial methods that seem to be working and expanding this?
Sure. We have in Michigan a program called Michigan Saves that's active across the state, and it really provides low-interest financing options for energy upgrades. And that can be anything from energy efficiency and upgrading the performance of your home, sealing your windows, turning out your lights, getting a new boiler, to actually putting solar on your roof and even EV charging. So qualifies. And a lot of these things, if you do it in a way that, it often can be, that it reduces your overall energy consumption more than the amount of the loan, you can then finance it over a period of 10 years or more to make it cost effective on day one, that the okay. loan repayment is less than the savings that you get from your utility bill.
Okay. As we record this program, the annual Upper Peninsula Energy Summit has been going on. Key topics last year were rates and the Michigan Energy Plan, reinforced in Public Acts 341 and 342, which were enacted in 2016. It sought to make Michigan energy more sustainable, reliable, affordable, and environmentally friendly. What's your assessment at this point?
I think the integrated resource plan that you talked about a little earlier is one of the sort of hallmarks of those 2016 bills, and I think it's working really well. We have most of the plans at this point filed, including from UPCO and UMERC. We've got one, the Consumers Energy Plan, that's been resolved, and it really sort of shifts from us being in a reactive position to whatever the utility proposes, or to just check the box, you know, we did a little more renewable energy, we did a little more energy efficiency, to taking a more holistic, comprehensive view and saying, of all the things that we could do from energy efficiency to renewables to a new gas plant to retirements, what is the best mix of those things that balances reliability, affordability, a diversity of energy mix to guard against future changes? And that sort of comprehensive look and long-term look, 5, 10, 15 years out into the future, I think is what's necessary to make sure that we're getting it right.
And you don't think it's becoming prematurely dated by some of the advances being made right now?
Well, that's one of the great things about the legislation, to be honest, is the utilities file their initial plans, and then they'll come back no longer than 5 years from now and give us a new plan. And so we say, here are the things that we think are, this is the right direction going forward today, but 5 years from now, if something's changed, we've got the opportunity to pivot. Yep.
Okay, that's great. I'm afraid we have to leave it there for time. We've been talking about the Michigan Public Service Commission, utilities, energy and telecommunications, with the latest member of the PSC, Commissioner Dan Scripps. Thank you for being here.
Bill, thanks very much.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.